Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. We made it to Tuesday. Getting past Monday, always a remarkable achievement. 251-343-0106 on the program this morning. Coming up in about 30 minutes, although he says he has some votes scheduled, so it may be kind of hit or miss. Congressman Barry Moore running in the 1st Congressional District, but currently representing the 2nd Congressional District. Real bumpy ride ahead in this election cycle, I'm afraid. But we'll talk to him about his campaign. We'll also talk to him a little bit about what's going on in Washington, D.C., with these spending bills and what Mike Johnson is trying to accomplish, the new Speaker of the House, the series of spending bills, and courting Democrat votes, it appears, to try to get what he needs accomplished. So that's coming up in about a half hour from now. Also on the program, he's running for Alabama State Supreme Court. He asked to come on regularly, so I'm happy to oblige. Also, if Sarah Stewart's out there, or she's welcome on this program also. But coming on today is Alabama Supreme Court candidate, Republican candidate, Brian Taylor. And then we'll wrap it up as we usually do on Tuesdays with the party chairman for the state, John Wall, will be with us. So make sure you tune in for that one more time at Ascension Technologies text line. 251-343-0106. We'll kick off a little national news here. There was a big vote last night in the House to at least initiate impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Remember this, guys, all throughout that 22 cycle. I mean, the Biden impeachment question was like, maybe, maybe not, probably. We'll think about it. He probably does, but Mayorkas was always definitely, we have to impeach Mayorkas. The border is a mess. The Biden administration is very like blatantly, disregarding immigration law. Mayorkas is lying to Congress, telling them the border is secure. He's lied on multiple occasions. He has to go. And as it turns out, they couldn't get that done last night, the House Republicans. I'm really a little, maybe it's just because it was a Marjorie Taylor Greene thing or something. But we're nearly a year into Republican control of the House. And a lot of the things that they talked about doing in that 22 cycle, this time a year ago, haven't been accomplished. That's one to watch. I can't think this is going away, but it probably, like I said, maybe it has something to do with Maybe it has something to do with it being Marjorie Taylor Greene's effort and not someone in leadership or somebody like that, at least Stefanik or someone who, I don't know. But they did talk about Mayorkas as a, you know, yeah, we got to do something there. I know I'm going to get the text. Well, Jeff, we told you so. We need fighters in the House. We need a fighter. The problem is you have, it's not the lack of fighters. It's the lack of, it's sort of the lack of convincing the moderate flank of the Republican Party to go along. I think the Don Bacon kind of guys in the House. I mean, he's the most egregious example. There's a bunch of these blue state Republicans, and they're kind of misfits. They're not woke left-leaguers. But they're very disdainful of Donald Trump. They were that way about the Tea Party. The Wacko Birds. Remember the Wacko Birds and John McCain? And these are guys who get elected, and it's I'm assuming, you give them the benefit of the doubt here, that they are acting on behalf of their constituents. This is what they want. The problem is with the squishy middle. There's no en masse force behind them. It's they just gum up the works. So I like my Lanyap column coming out Wednesday. Yeah, I still write for Lanyap, by the way. Kind of about the middle. Like I get irritated by the snootiness of those in the middle. And you know, tell me this: the five like left wing listeners I have here, they look down at the right and the left, like as if there's virtue in being in the middle. And I think sometimes these guys who claim the center, that they mistake like style for substance. They mistake tone for policy or whatever. Because Donald Trump is loud and obnoxious. He's a far right winger, but he's not. I mean, he's a guy. He spent a lot of money. I say right wingers, but a lot of these so-called intellectual conservatives, let's say, they look at immigration a little different. It's like a Ron Paul point of view. Are certainly on trade, no tariffs, free trade. There's never a time when you should impose a tariff on another nation ever. Foreign policy, isolationist, America first, fortress America. And Donald Trump was some of that. But it's not like he was, I mean, he's not John Birch Society Republican. I mean, that was like sort of the, you want to go down the, kind of lay it out all on like a line, and down here is like the far right, and down here is the moderate, and you look at all the Republican candidates. And somebody like a Ted Cruz, or Rand Paul even is further to the right than Donald Trump. But I bet if you ask your average moderate, like, who's further to the right, Rand Paul or Donald Trump, they would say Donald Trump. And it's just not true. So, like, the snooty center, and they do this to the left, too. But this is like, say you have 0 and you have 10, which is better. And someone would say 5 is better. Well, why 5? Well, because it's halfway in the middle. It's but you know, it's just a, it's like, is there's some kind of notoriety in staking out the middle, the squishy middle, the moderates, and they looked down at people who have these beliefs, these convictions, and maybe they're like excited about them or speaking out, very outspoken. But you see that creeping up in our politics a lot lately. The middle. Joe Manchin is what kind of instigated this. If he doesn't run for, or he's not running for Senate, if he runs for president, he's going to be the great moderate, right? We just need moderation. That'll solve all our problems. And you look at the two sides. You got like the left in America right now. They're out chanting against Israel, and they're demanding free college tuition. They say there's 20 different genders. And you go down the list of like the demands of BLM for reparations and all of that. And you look over here at the right. And the 21st century Republican Party, I think it's populist. It's much, Donald Trumped up, very pro middle class. kind of anti-corporate, anti-elitism. You can go down and assign any characteristic you want to Trump or any characteristic you want to the woke left. Where the hell is the middle in between there? Is it like, can you diagram that on a map for me or something? Anyway, just something to think about there as we approach this election cycle. 251-343-0106 if you want to be in touch with the program. But all that just to kind of kick it off there about what the problem was with Mayorkas and not really getting enough votes. A lot of moderate Republicans kind of ditching the party. Let's see. We talked about the spending bill a little bit. We're going to get Congressman Moore to get more into that in a moment. Okay, so very strange phenomenon in the MSNBC CNN media. And well, you're like, well, why do you watch that nonsense? Well, it's a good prelude. It's a good kind of indicator of what's going on behind the scenes. There's been this like proliferation of mentions of Hitler, or comparisons of Trump, or just some reason. The mainstream media is really hyping up the Hitler talk when it comes to Trump. Now, and some of it's just comparisons of Hitler to Trump. And some of it is just like these historical parallels. We're not saying that Trump is Hitler, but when Hitler was rising to power, this was what was going on. But then you had the others who just out and out, just outright say it. You have like a Adam Schiff last night on cable news. Trump's this is a John Carl of ABC News. Trump's always looked up to Hitler. He's looked up to his generals, and like, where does this coming from? It's never, as a general rule, it's never good to talk about Hitler. It's like even uncomfortable talking about it in this talk context. And it's certainly never like appropriate to compare your political adversaries to Adolf Hitler. But such as it is, we're here and we keep hearing this on cable news. So I can like cite at least a half dozen examples. But the thing about the left, they're not very good. I mean, they're good at being organized and being on script, but they're almost too good at being on script. Because you know, like the average watcher, I'm not an average consumer of news. I watch way too much of it. But you pick up on these cues. These buzzwords, these phrases, it's like when the talking point goes out and then 20 people use it in a 24-hour time span, you kind of wonder who's sowing these seeds, who's sending out the memo. What on earth is going on here? But, Hitler? I mean, when you start playing the Hitler card, doesn't that seem a little desperate? And guys, it's only November, a year out. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. He's kind of just like no bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some tell my mind it breaks. Let it all hang out, cause we got to run to make. Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for listening on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. 0606. That is the Ascension Technologies. A text line hit us up there. James, a sad troll. Here we go. Tell us which Republican president had immigration completely under control. And then I'm not saying that's the case at all, James. I mean, you got to stop with this moral equivalency stuff, I guess, on that. We being in the center, you're not in the center. You're a left-wing ideologue. Call out both parties, wins and losses. We all know parties are wings off the same bird. Like watching Fox, you get a good sense of how morally bankrupt they are. Well, I mean, like, James is sad troll, there's buzzwords. And I mean, there's just like the right does it, but maybe I'm just like desensitized to it. But I am telling you, the left is way better at this than the right at sending out a talking point, at sending out a script. The White House comms shop. The Tuberville stuff is the best example I can offer you, where the military holds, we're not talking about the policy or any of that. I don't want to argue about that. What I want you to focus on is the response from Democrats is consistent. You know, you don't have like a talk show host over here saying one thing and a MSNBC host saying one thing and then a newspaper columnist saying another and then a CNN report. They're all like linked and they're all using the same verbiage. And that's what's kind of incredible about the left to me is how they're able to organize. Whereas the right, like any given day, you can have 20 different takes on the same issue. The right's not unified on any of this. Just sort of the point I was trying to make, even though it just kind of went over your head, but back on the center versus the right versus the left, just because you're in the center and you're not in the center, James, you're moving the goalposts if you really think you're a centrist. But there's sort of an arrogance. There's I don't know, looking down at, we're not like the right or the left. We're sensible. We're moderate. But my question is this, what is moderate? I know that like the political spectrum is not linear. It's multidimensional. But how are you going to stake out a spot halfway between the two sides? It would be so inconsistent. You can't do it. Yeah. Okay. So you have a complete abortion ban on one side and unlimited abortion on the other. What's the middle there? Well, then it's abortion halfway through the pregnancy. Well, that's liberal too. These are all like kind of the things I think you really need to think about here. At least in my point, in my mind, like I don't think it's a policy or a political position. I just think it's a tone question, and the left tends to be more outspoken, and the right tends to be more outspoken because they're very vociferous in their beliefs. They're not afraid to say it like they think it ought to be. Take to the streets or. Take to the Jeff Porter Show text line and let it rip. And for some reason, we mistake, like, or some people to be like, we don't do that. We have a calm, merry, sort of moderated presence. We don't yell. We don't do these things. We don't use insightful words. We keep it very even tempered, very even. If you know, proclaim virtue in your moderation, but it's not really like you're not really centrist. Well, at least I don't know what you stand for if you are, or if you claim you are. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the show. Please use your texting device. Still to come on the program about an hour from now, we'll talk to Brian Taylor running for the Alabama Supreme Court. Also on the program coming up, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. That's in the 11 o'clock hour, so stay tuned for that. But joining us now, it's my pleasure to bring on our next guest. He's running in the 1st Congressional District, but for now he represents the folks in what is currently the 2nd Congressional District here in Alabama. But Congressman Barry Moore on the line with us. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. We are doing good. How are you, sir?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time for us. We do appreciate it. I know you got some busy votes going underway this morning. Real quick, let's kick it off here. Kind of walk us through what happened last night. The Mayorkas vote didn't quite get there. Where are we on that, you think?
So I don't know. I appreciate Marjorie, and I was a co-sponsor of that because Mayorkas needs to go. And it's not just because he's not doing his job on the border, which we know that with the millions that are poured into this country. We've had him in front of judiciary, and he's one of few people that I can honestly say will look you straight in the face and lie to you and tell you the border is secure while the video shows people pouring across. That is a direct result, and not only just fentanyl poisonings in our country, but a rise in crime. And recently, I think they said only 2% of the people who had been to New York illegally, or those illegals who had been shipped to New York, actually got work permits. But in addition to that, we discovered this week on judiciary through depositions that Mayorkas was working on an election integrity partnership with some of the universities and some of the big tech people, and they were silencing conservatives. So not only is he a part of an open border, not enforcing laws that are on the books and protecting American citizens and allowing invasion, at the same time, he is wanting to spy and quiet and silence those conservative voices in America on Twitter and other social media platforms, the Hunter Biden laptop, all those stories that were out there. He created, you know, remember they started a disinformation governance board, Jeff, and he got so blew up in committee that they walked that back. But then secretly they went around with the EIP, which is an election integrity partnership, we discovered. And they're doing the same exact thing to the American people under the dark of agencies and bureaucrats, the things that really are not working for the American people.
Well, I mean, do you think you guys in the House take another shot at Mayorkas in the future?
We sure need to. I've been proactive in trying to get rid of him. I think that's something that needs to happen. And honestly, look, this entire government bureaucracy under Biden is weaponized against the American people, against free speech, against your Second Amendment rights. And so we have a responsibility to continue to hold them accountable. Impeachment is part of that process. Oversight is part of that process. But never forget the funding mechanism. That really is where we have power. People call me all the time and say, hey, we're tired of the hearings. You know, we want some results. And so the funding mechanism is now where the fight is. We can continue to have our impeachment. There is a uniparty in Washington, D.C. that does not want to see significant change. But at the same time, there's conservatives coming in, Jeff, that I think are making a difference. Some of us in House Freedom Caucus. And I think the election and the fight over the speaker was part of that process of a new type of conservative leadership, America First people that are here. And we're in the fight. It's not going to be easy. And at times it's going to look like we're maybe not getting much done. But this does not change overnight, my friend, but we're in the fight to win it.
Yeah, it's certainly a kind of a slow process. Speaking of processes, let's talk about this potential government shutdown, Mike Johnson's approach here. It looks like, at least reportedly, he's courting Democrat votes. What do you make of this situation where we stand today?
Well, let me say personally, this is not an attack against Mike Johnson. He is a good man. He's a man of faith and a dear friend of mine. But I think he's been in there 19 days, and in some ways he's worried about a government shutdown. But to me, we need to go with our 12 approach bills. I voted against the two CRs. We did not come here to do business as usual. Most of us did not. We have a responsibility to do 12 appropriations bills and not just do these CRs or these omnibuses at Christmas that put us now $33 trillion in debt, which is $33,000 billion. And the reason this has happened and we've gotten here is 27 years of no approach. And so, man, there's some of us who are saying, Mike, we want 12 appropriation bills. We want to do the process the way the founders intended, the way the process should be done, and not do this omnibus. And so I think Mike's concern about a shutdown is that, oh, you know, it's going to look bad for Republicans. man, you know what's going to look bad for Republicans if we go along to get along and continue this uniparty process of just funding this runaway government, weaponizing its American people. And certainly we need to isolate DHS and DOJ out of these bills because we just voted last night to impeach Mayorkas, most of us in the Republican conference. At the same time, we're going to vote to give him money in a CR. Why would we do that? And that's, like I said, we've got oversight. But our next process is the budget. And I, you know, look, one of the things Jim Jordan and I are working on is we want to move these agencies, Jeff, out of Washington, D.C. And for Republicans, a few of them last week, and a bunch of Democrats to vote to fund the FBI to build a new building in Washington, D.C. is counterproductive. We're trying to move it to Huntsville. Let's 90% of federal employees give to the Democratic Party. Why would we keep funding this cancer in Washington, D.C. that quiets the American people, that rules over the American people? They become our they think we're their subjects instead of their servants. I mean, I'm sorry, they think, yeah, instead of them being public servants, they make us their subjects. And, man, why would we fund that? So that's the fight, brother. That's where we're at.
Well, and getting where you need to be vote-wise, I mean, and Speaker Johnson looks like he's at least won a little bit of favor from Schumer and that crowd, and I think seen some people in the Biden administration with this approach. That makes me a little skeptical of this approach that he's got underway here.
Yeah, I think you got to fire that first shot. And our point in House Freedom Caucus is let's send 12 approach bills to the Senate. Let's call it the Schumer shutdown. Don't let them just hit us with an omnibus at Christmas. And when they say, oh, we're going to send an omnibus here at the end of the year at last minute, and they always threaten us with the shutdown because they do try to punish our soldiers. They do try to punish the people that we appreciate in this country and that we know are doing their jobs. But at the same time, those people that are fighting for the liberty and the freedom in this country, they want us to fight for their rights and freedom as well. And the way we do that is through 12 approach bills and through a process that we can threaten to shut this thing down briefly if we have to. Because still 70-80% of the government's going to function whether there's a shutdown or not. Now, the media will try to spin that on us. But I think that's our leverage. I'm not saying we need a shutdown. What I'm saying is we have to be willing to fight the tough fight at this point in the history of this nation to save this nation. You cannot vote for bacon. You can't simultaneously bring home the bacon and save the nation. You just simply cannot do both.
Joined by Congressman Barry Moore of the 2nd Congressional District, also candidate for Congress in this election cycle for the 1st Congressional District. Well, the field is set. Not quite your old district is very crowded, but this 1st Congressional District, it's you and Congressman Carl in the Republican side, and I believe a Democrat did qualify. But kind of where are you as far as the campaign goes right now?
We're up and going. You know, about seven of those counties that are in the new District 1 are mine, and two are my opponents. And so we have a lot of area in there that we've already covered that we've represented well. And, you know, when this district was Cooks rated it a couple weeks ago, Jeff, it went from number 75 most conservative district in the nation to number 6. And me being House Freedom Caucus and being rated CPAC as one of the most conservative members from the Alabama delegation are the most conservative in 2022. It's a district that we can represent well. And so Heather and I prayed about it. We're waiting for a green light. We felt this is where we need to engage. People encouraged us to stay in the fight. And, hey, that's what we're going to do. And, you know, for our office, I mean, we were rated the most effective congressional office from Alabama in my freshman year. And so we have proven that you can truly be conservative and at the same time effective in this swamp that we live in up here in the system we fight for our constituency. And you can do it. You can be effective. But it's a lot to do with our great team. And certainly this year we were rated number 2 in the nation out of all Republicans on constituent services by solving over 3,700 cases. So, again, we've proven we're here to serve the people. I think my staff does that. And, hey, I think we can continue to serve. We'll add a little bit of Baldwin and some of Mobile County to the 6 counties or 7 counties that we have now. But we're going to continue to do what we've been doing. If the people want to hire us back, we're happy to serve.
It's a complicated district because, I mean, it's Mississippi to Georgia, or as we've been saying on this show, Dolphin Island to Dothan. How do you mentioned that you've already conquered or you're already familiar with two-thirds of the district, let's say. What do you do to kind of capture or familiarize yourself and present yourself to the voters over here on our side of AL1?
So we've already been over there some, and I think it's just a matter. And then listen, when people come to Washington, D.C., they get two for the price of one. I can't tell you how many White House tours my wife has given from people from that part of the world. And so as they come to D.C., because Heather travels with me, we've got to know many of those people. And some of our strongest support is in that area. And so We're going to continue to message, man, that we were the first with Trump. We endorsed him in Lab People Stadium in August 21st, 2015, the first elected official in the nation to endorse him when he was running. Obviously, I was a delegate then. I was a delegate this time. I've signed up. And so we're going to continue to just do what we do and be conservative and fight for the people and for what we believe in. And we're not going to back up on that. We did that for 8 years in the state legislature before we term limited ourselves. We've been here in Washington, D.C. fighting. Again, we were rated the most effective Republican in my freshman year from Alabama as far as serving these people. And look, man, we can run on our record, Jeff, and we're proud of that record. And we're going to continue to run on that record and let the people choose.
Well, something you did in 2020, and it's always sort of amazed me when you're running against Jeff Coleman. And there was the big lag between the primary and the runoff because of COVID. But really, like, you were pretty strong, but where you really turned on or opened up the floodgates or whatever, up in the those two counties, north of Montgomery and Autauga and Elmore County, and, I mean, those are pretty far away from Coffee County and Enterprise, and you were able to do that up there with what I would say, what seems to me, maybe they're not as familiar with you, certainly weren't familiar with Coleman, but is that... But you look back at that and that experience and kind of entering into a new territory there, you ever look back at that and say, what did we do here? And we got really familiar and we had really good results coming out of that.
Yeah, I think the key for us is we never go negative. My wife and I and our family, our faith is priority. We're not going to go out here and run our witness attacking other people. We're, again, going to run on our record. That's what we've done. And people got to know our hearts and knew we were in this for the fight. Look, this is not something I wanted to do. We felt called to do this. And so we're in a fight for the future of this country. There is a lot at stake. And so when you share your heart with people, they know your intentions. They understand that, hey, you know what? This guy's doing this because he feels called to do it, and he's not talking bad about the other people. I simply asked people in 2020, I said, 2020 is hindsight. Look at my record. Don't go based on what I tell you I'm going to do. Look at our record. And, Jeff, look, we're House Freedom Caucus in D.C. We told people we'd do that. We're the most conservative member, according to CPAC, in 2022 out of the Alabama delegation. We were with Trump way before it was popular, before the train left the station. And we consistently fought. I joined the Ag Committee, and we continue to fight for agriculture. And I'm on Judiciary, where I'm holding Christopher Wray, the FBI, those guys, the DOJ, Merrick Garland, all of those people, we're holding them accountable. And so I told the people I would do that. That's what I'm going to continue to do. And we're in this fight to save this nation. And we don't mind being the tip of the spear. People get behind us, and very often they do.
Well, and you mentioned House Freedom Caucus. I guess from your standpoint, you think you'll get help there in this cycle? But more importantly, I would say probably bigger picture. Do you think the House Freedom Caucus is in a position to sort of grow its ranks in the House of Representatives?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. The thing you find a little disappointing is people run all the time and say, oh, I'm going to join the House Freedom Caucus when they get to D.C. And then when they get here, the special interests and the big committee appointments and assignments, the big money gets a hold of them, and they don't do what they said they were going to do. But I have seen House Freedom Caucus grow. And, you know, I think it's up to about 40 members. And look, it started with Jim Jordan and just a few guys, Warren Davis and Mark Meadows, a few years ago. And I think the temperature in America has, I think if with Trump winning, I think people begin to realize that, hey, this system is truly broken and it's not working for us and we must take it back. And so they're continually sending America First candidates here. And that's how the ranks of House Freedom Caucus grows. And they have an excellent brand. I mean, people love the House Freedom Caucus. And so being a part of that, Jeff, being in that room, I tell you, that's one of the few places I go in D.C. I don't feel like I need a shower because I'm in the room with patriots, people who are putting this country first and not their political careers. And that's what we have to do. And that's not always easy, but their ranks are growing and so is their influence.
Last question, we'll get you out of here on this. When you were making your decision to run for AL1, how seriously did you look at AL2, running outside the district, or any of the other options before you decided on going in this direction?
Jeff, that was one of the toughest things for me because you talk about praying and not knowing what the Lord is calling you to do sometime. I was torn because, you know, I looked at two and it became so moderate and I'm the most conservative guy from the Alabama delegation. How could I want to be Vox Populi. I really want to represent people. And so I didn't have a good feeling about trying to represent a district that was, you know, leaning Democrat, leaning more moderate when I'm a House Freedom Caucus guy. And that doesn't make sense to try to serve. But when I saw the numbers come through on this one, we kind of felt like that this, look, we were in the fire for Jordan to be speaker. There were some things going on with appropriators that concerned me and some of the big money committees up here that weren't supporting Jim behind the scenes. That was one of the red flags for us. But then when you saw this district become the sixth most conservative district in the nation from number 75, and you thought, wow, you know what? That's a district I can represent. I can be. I can vote who I am. I can stand on my convictions, and they're going to appreciate me for that. That makes a decision easy.
Congressman, we'll get you out here on this. Folks need to find out, especially in our neck of the woods, may not be familiar with you. Need to find out more about who you are or anything about your campaign. Where can they look?
So, I mean, we've got social media. Obviously, we've got Barrymore Republican for Congress social media. We also, on the official side, we have some newsletters we do each week, the More You Know newsletter we send out of our office. And so just depending on, there's a lot of moving parts, and we're constantly doing interviews. But I would say, yeah, check out our social media. That's a good spot to go and look, and Barrymore Republican for Congress. And we're happy to try to answer any questions. And honestly, you'll find it interesting. My wife and I, especially my wife, monitors that pretty closely for us, and we try to get back to people.
Congressman, you're always very kind to make time for this show. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. Have a great day, buddy.
You do the same. That was Congressman Barry Moore there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, let's take it on down to Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. Want to be in touch with the show? Use the text line, and we will respond to whatever is on your mind. So to come on the program, Brian Taylor coming up in the next hour, as well as John Wall, the 11 o'clock hour. John Wall, the chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. So please stay tuned for that. Derek, we're going to get through some of these texts. We got a bunch just to kind of put them off, except for James. But Derek writes this: if the kids can have 30 genders, we can have three different political views. It's sad we have a larger choice of chicken fingers and political parties. And I'm not saying that you can't, but like, there's sort of this pretentiousness in the middle, like we're not them. But they don't define themselves as anything other than we're not those guys. We're not those guys. We don't use the same angry rhetoric they use. We don't have these positions. So what do you stand for? You just compromise on everything, or do you have like what is the backbone of the modern American middle right now? And there's all kinds of variety, shapes, and forms of conservatism and liberalism. I'm not saying that it's not multifaceted, but the arrogance of the center, the David Brooks. As I mentioned, there's guys in Congress, Susan Collins, and you get Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin just is an interesting figure because it's not as if he reached his political stances because he's a pragmatic. Well, maybe it was pragmatism, but a different reason that he's a deep thinker and really thought out every issue and said, you know, this is the right way to do it. And he found himself right there halfway. No, he's a survivor. It is a approach that he needed to be to survive politically in West Virginia. Because the guy could probably be whatever you needed him to be as long as you voted for him. And that's what I find the center to be. It's just there's a lot of purple states out there. And it's not as if the purple states, the purple districts have a bunch of moderation, a bunch of people in the middle. What they have are a lot of people kind of split evenly on both sides, so you have to kind of walk that fine line to make both of these constituencies happy. You got to do a balancing act. And it's not steeped in this, like, high-minded intellectualism. Like, we really thought out this important policy on Ukraine, and we struck a citrus tone on it. That's what I'm trying to, that's the point I'm trying to make. That it's not, it's absolutely not something that's superior. It's just another place on the totem pole, if you will. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
No. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0101. 060 to be in touch with the program. Utilize the text lines. It'll come in about 30 minutes. Brian Taylor running for Alabama State Supreme Court. That's a candidate for Chief Justice there in about a half hour. Let's see here. Kind of watching the news during the break there. All three cable channels talking about the hospitals in northern Gaza needing to be protected. Or at least Biden's comments about him, let's say. I was like kind of watching this. The Fox News take on it, though, is look at the tunnels running underneath the hospitals. What do you do in this situation? The Israelis are being told you can't attack hospitals, but the Hamas is using the hospitals as a safe haven. So you have to adhere to the standard rules, but we don't have to. I mean, this is a terrorist organization, right? So the Hamas is going in, and the military just needs to go. The IDF just needs to figure out a way to get the hospital and just take it over. I would think, but Biden's not helping any here. It's just, it continues to kill me at how much Biden and the Biden administration is meddling in this conflict. And I don't understand it. Benjamin Netanyahu is spending a lot of time on American media having to counter the Biden administration. Your nation's at war, and you're having to lobby here and go on Fox News and have to lobby the court of public opinion. It's like October 7th didn't exist, and Israel's just hostile. I don't know where any of this comes from. As I said yesterday, I'm just like perplexed by the all of a sudden Israel's attacked, and the pro-Palestinian movement wakes up and people dig out their Palestine flags. Where do you even get a Palestinian flag at? Like, you can't go down to Walmart and get a Palestinian flag, Katie. I guess you could order them online. But you see people in the streets of Palestinian flags in the United States. It's just a weird thing to see. And like, if Hamas doesn't launch its attack, what are these people doing with their spare time? Are they flying Ukraine flags? 251-343-0106, the Ascension Technologies text line. Hit me up there. All right, as promised, somebody's text out of the way. Michael says, I think the problem isn't the lack of fighters in Congress. It's a lack of principles and conviction to do anything based on the worldview they say they have. I suppose, but the pressure is overwhelming. Like, hey, man, you've got to go along with the spending bill. No, I don't think so. No, you got to. I'm telling you, you got to go. I mean, just like you got to shut down the government and the media are going to come after us. And the courage you need, when you pray for any elected official, right or left, Republican or Democrat, is to give them the courage they know what the right thing to do is. do what they feel is limited, but have the courage to do it, regardless of the pressure. The pressure is enormous. You have a lot of big money floating around Washington that wants certain things, and they don't care about the debt. You have a lot of actors. Congressman Morrill is right about needing to move some of the bureaucracy out of D.C. And I think the case they need to make is this. Like, look, Washington, D.C. is fine for Congress and the executive, but like, where can government better serve the American people? If you live in Seattle, Washington, Washington, D.C. seems like a million miles away. If you live in, even if you live in Topeka, Kansas, San Diego, I mean, why not break up some of the law enforcement, some of the alphabet soup, and spread it around the country? Randy writes this, good morning, Jeff. Well, good morning, Randy. I don't know if you mentioned it yesterday or if you saw Sunday night's episode of The Voice of Alabama Politics. Our lead story was about 1819 News and the reporting of what this pastor did, took his life. A very one-sided story that gives a true understanding of the left-wing ideals. I think they tempered it. I did watch it. I do think they tempered it a little bit. The guys at the V... Bill Brett, who I used to be my friend, I don't know that we're quite as tight as we once were, really, really taking issue with what we did at 1819 News. But they're not clean on this front either. And I mentioned this on the show last week. We did a story at 1819 News, Randy. They kind of did something similar to Robbie McGee. Except Robbie McGee, not quite the public figure that Mayor Copeland was. Was it a pastor or a mayor of a town? He was a tribal elder, if you will, for the Poarch Creek Indians, and posted an embarrassing photo and a video, apparently, but I can't find the video, on APR. And they're cited their reasoning as... hey, if you want to be this person, you got to be an outstanding member of the public and upstanding, and you got to do the right thing. And talked about how Republicans who accepted money from PCI had to deal with Robbie McGee's lifestyle. Very, very strange approach, but Bill Brent did that. So he's lecturing us about something he did 5 years ago. Anyway, enough of that. Joel in Somerdale writes, ain't that good? Let's quit serving warranty because the blank. Jeez, I don't know. Joel, I'm going to have to take a pass on. I don't even know what you're rambling about there, but get some help, man. Unnamed Dexter. You bad someone wants to try to find, I know there's a voice to text issue, unnamed texture that I can't decipher. That's too bad. Two duds in a row there. Calvin, the rule should be there are no rules. You came into my land. Now I'm dealing you the ultimate hand. Well, I think there has to be some rules. We are a civilized people. But the problem, Calvin, is that you can't have one set of rules for one side and another set of rules for the other. There's no way to hold Hamas accountable under these rules. There's a problem. Was it, you ever listen to Dan Carlin's podcast about history? One of the themes of it is the Eastern approach to warfare versus the Western approach to warfare, and the Eastern approach, Far Eastern culture, or you know, is it's just no rules, do what you got to do, take on a bigger, more sophisticated, more technologically advanced Western culture, the way they had to. Sometimes they pull in guerrilla tactics or whatever, but it's very piecemeal. But it's also no rules. Western civilization, much different. There's a sort of a code, if you will. But that's just it. I mean, that's the conflict. That's a fault line right there. Gaza and Israel. Right there, it's like competing approaches to warfare. Competing approaches to culture. Competing approaches to religion. And it's butting heads. So you have these fault lines all throughout the world. And that's where these conflicts tend to bubble up. And that's always the problem with the left. They're not willing to accept that cultures sometimes cannot coexist. I can't explain it. It's irrational. They should be able to coexist, but they just can't. And this is an example of it. And I think that's why they have such a weird sort of stance on what Israel's trying to do to protect its homeland. I think you've got to have rules. You got to strive to have rules. And the other side's not going to play by the rules. What do you do? You're going to haul them to Geneva to stand trial? I mean, the ultimate goal here is just survival and safety and public safety and protecting your people, not conforming to some nice little rule book written in a faraway land. That's what I think a lot of people, especially here in America, don't understand. Tim, Jeff, we just need to start popping caps. Not sure what to do with that. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit on that, Tim. 251-343-0106. We'll be in touch with the show. Hit us up on that text line. A story we got up at 1819 News, the library controversy sort of kind of simmering on. Nancy Pack, the head of the Alabama Library Public Service, apparently has said, so a couple of weeks ago, she sent a letter to Governor Ivey announcing that the Alabama Public Library Service would no longer be a member of the American Library Association, which does have some far leftist views. As far as library associations go, they are led by one of the alphabet people who self-proclaimed Marxist. And that looks to be on track of leaving, but I guess behind closed doors, Nancy Pack said, no, I'm just saying that to the governor. When things cool down, we'll get back in and be a member of this organization. But right now, the heat's turned up on us, and we got to do what we got to do. And it's a theme of this program. When the bureaucracy doesn't really represent the constituency, the people who pay the bills through tax dollars, and kind of do things on their own in a show of defiance. I mean, this conversation all the time, Senator Elliott and I, when he's on. We have a bureaucracy problem in Alabama. Go figure. Of all places, Alabama, a place that on paper ought to be conservative and right-wing, but is really more of the civil servants really run this state, to be honest. It's not elected officials. And this library controversy is a textbook example of it. More on that on the other side. Let's get a break in here. This is the Jeff Forrest Show on FM Talk 106.5.
To rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Single drop of rain.
thought inside my head. Before I reached 30, I'd be dead. But somehow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. 24 minutes after the hour. Brian Taylor running for Alabama State Supreme Court Chief Justice coming up in the next segment. In the 11 o'clock hour, we'll have Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall, our Tuesday regular coming up. And we'll gauge his reaction to some of this library news and so on and so forth. But back to the point I was trying to make, though. In Alabama, I mean, it's pretty right of center. Would anybody disagree with that? What we have, though, is a left-of-center bureaucracy kind of dictating state government. And most bureaucracies, if not all, at least government bureaucracies, are very left-wing. You don't go work for government and at least not have some kind of belief that the government is a force for good or something productive or whatever it may be. There's probably a few exceptions, but generally speaking, if you're going to work for the Alabama Department of Commerce, well, then you believe you got hired on the basis that you believe in using government to sort of grow the economy or recruit business or whatever it may be. That's just sort of how it works. Anyway, Where it really gets us off the rails here is where they know better than you. Look, we learned this during a good example is Archives and History here. When Department of Archives and History held an LGBTQ history at Alabama luncheon, there's a lot of pushback from people. People didn't like it. Lawmakers got involved. And once that happened, the bureaucracy there, the people who run that agency said, no, we don't care what you got to say. We're going to go ahead and proceed forward. You people in Alabama don't know what's good for you. This is an important part of our history to showcase. And look, we can have a discussion, we can have a debate, we can have an argument, we can have whatever about the merits of whatever policy these agencies want to put in place, for better or for worse. But when it comes down to in a representative democracy, in a for the people, by the people, consent to the governed, is adhering to their wishes. And you have to give an honest effort to do that. And a lot of people in government don't care about any of that. They want to take a different approach and kind of tell you what to do. You don't know what is good for you. Jerry writes this, the idea of rules for dealing with terrorists who rape and burn people alive is crazy. Those animals have a 3-year-old child who is a citizen of America. We should be killing terrorists and keep killing them until they are no longer resistant. So they celebrate in the streets like they did after 9/11. Well, I mean, I don't know that's the moral argument or an ethical argument. But I think a lot of people are on board with that, Jerry. These are some bad actors. No question about it. But in warfare, what if your side gets captured? Don't you want some kind of prisoner of war rights? You don't want torture. You don't want anything like that. I mean, that's the intention. In practice, maybe it's not as easy. But we can't violate the terms of our own agreements. I mean, just imagine during, you know, World War II, I mean, POW camps are pretty brutal. I got one that says, don't read this on air. Okay. Ron, did USA worry about Japanese hospitals in Hiroshima? Nope. Well, like you said, two wrongs make a right is not always the best argument. 251-343-0106. Let's be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the show. Hit me up on that text line. Still to come, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall will be with us. So please stick around for that. But joining us now, we'll get him on from time to time, but I'm pleased to be joined by he's a former state senator, but he's running for Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice position there. I got a couple of opponents qualified. Brian Taylor joins us. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on again this morning.
Thanks for making time for us. Well, let's kick it off here. You now have the field is set for the Republican primary. How you feel about things at this point where we stand?
Well, I'm feeling great. I mean, when I get out and speak to groups, I think, you know, our message really resonates, the message of the need for a conservative, a true conservative at the head of the court system, somebody who's going to stand up to the weaponization of our courts, unafraid, unabashed, and defend our courts from being weaponized for political purposes or ideological purposes or financial gain. I mean, the court system should be fair and impartial and should apply the rule of law as written. And that's what I'm going to do as Chief Justice. And so when we talk about that, as I'm getting around the state, and we've been getting around the state all over the place, people are really receiving that message and understand how important it is for us to make sure we have a conservative at the top of the court system.
Well, and let's, you know, the thing I always like to ask you guys running for the state Supreme Court, and I don't know how you pull it off or what you do here, but the Alabama Constitution of 1901 is kind of the document here that you really got to know. Like, how do you manage that? How do you become an expert on that and are able to, you know, potentially have to rule on cases in a way that conforms to this very, very complicated document?
Well, look, in a lot of ways, the Alabama Constitution is derived from, you know, from constitutions of other states that came before Alabama and basically from the same premise as the U.S. Constitution. It does contain some additional safeguards, for example, the Second Amendment rights that we enjoy under the U.S. Constitution. Those are also emboldened. Embodied in the Alabama Constitution. But look, as a lawyer, as a judge, we're well trained in doing the research on the law, and you apply those provisions as they're written to the extent that that they're unambiguous. And when there's a question, you look to see how the court has ruled in previous cases. And it's important to follow precedent. Long-standing precedent, well-established precedent. I'm not talking about crazy cases in recent decades where the court has disregarded the true intent and the true purpose of some provision in order to reach a judge's favorite outcome in a particular case. But you look back to long-standing precedent, as I think our U.S. Supreme Court has been doing recently in correcting some very bad opinions. For example, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade recently, and the left made a lot of criticism that the court was somehow throwing out years of settled constitutional jurisprudence by overturning Roe v. Wade. And in fact, the U.S. Supreme Court said, look, we're looking back at the traditions and history of law in the United States, and Roe v. Wade was a relatively new not very well supported decision in the 70s. And so the court overturned that case and has now returned the abortion issue to the states where it belongs. And so whether it's the Alabama Constitution or the U.S. Constitution, you do the research, you apply the law as written, and when you need to refer back to court cases, you apply longstanding precedent based on the history, the traditions, and the principles that have always underlied our system of laws in this country.
And, you know, without so much of this is why is this such an important thing is when you're on a campaign trail, Brian, it's tough to really balance like judicial philosophy without jumping into, well, how would you rule in this case or how would you rule in that case?
Yeah.
And to me, like, these are the questions you have to ask these guys, all you guys running for these appeals courts and the statewide Supreme Court positions. Like, well, like, I think to the layman, I can't even imagine where you would begin. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, so maybe that's something to do with it, number one. But number two, like, you know, a judicial philosophy when you're at the federal court, a little easier. The federal code's pretty complicated, but certainly the Constitution, not as complex. But state court, a lot of additional variables, I would say, that you have to handle.
Well, I think the judges, a lot of times judicial candidates are very often too quick to say, well, I can't discuss this or that issue because it might come before the court. That's not really the standard. I mean, the standard is, as judges, you have to apply the law and the facts and on a case-by-case basis to each individual case, and you can't speak to a case prior to it coming before your court. But we run for office in the state. We have elected judges for a reason, and that's because we need to make sure that that our judges and their judicial philosophy reflects the values of the people of Alabama. That's the whole purpose for having judicial elections. So I think it's entirely fair to ask judicial candidates and to demand that judicial candidates explain their judicial philosophy. And so that's what I'm doing out on the trail. The other thing we can do is we can talk about past cases and rulings in past cases. You know, in my case in particular, because I've served in the Alabama State Senate, I've worked for two Republican governors, I've worked for the Republican Party as a legal advisor, and in my private practice, I've worked for a number of national conservative groups. I can point all day long to my positions in the past, my record on things like pro-life legislation, Second Amendment legislation. These things are important to me as a Republican, and I've supported those in the past, and I don't mind discussing those. When you're talking about a judge who's been sitting on the bench, you can look to past cases. And the perfect example I would give you, just a few weeks ago, Jeff, the Alabama Supreme Court handed down a case overturning a trial judge verdict against Dollar General. Dollar General had been sued by a customer inside the store for injuries that customer incurred, not due to anything Dollar General did, but due to another customer driving their car, crashing through the front of Dollar General in Northport. And the plaintiff sued Dollar General, and the court held Dollar General liable for that case. That went up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court overturned that verdict against the business owner, Dollar General, 8-1. There was only one vote in favor of the plaintiff, the trial lawyer, the plaintiff's trial lawyers in that case, and that was Sarah Stewart, my opponent. And so, you know, I intend to look to talk about that case and hope that she will accept my invitation to debate and perhaps explain why she thinks business owners should be liable for other people driving through the front of their store. I think that speaks to again to judicial philosophy and whether we're going to, on the bench, whether we're going to support fairness and the rule of law being applied to cases, or we're going to lean towards, letting the court system be weaponized for personal gain. And that's one area where I'm very different than my opponent, Sarah Stewart, and I intend to talk about that.
Well, what do you say to this, though? I mean, not really having much time on the bench there, Brian. Does that come up that you're sort of new, and you're making a leap all the way to Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, it does come up. People ask that question. I have not served on the bench myself, but you know, being an appellate judge is very different than being a trial judge. It is a different skill set to a large extent, and that's why half of our Supreme Court today has no prior judicial experience. They're appellate lawyers, just like I am, before they got elected. Half of the chief justices we've had in this state, going back to at least to Howell Heflin, had no prior judicial experience. Chief Justice Rehnquist of the U.S. Supreme Court had no prior judicial experience. And the reason that happens is because appellate judges basically do what appellate lawyers do. They research the law. They apply law to the facts, which have already been decided at the trial level, and they write opinions or briefs basically explaining the rationale behind the decision. And so it's not that critical for an appellate judge to have trial court experience. I will say, as Chief Justice, what is critical is to have experience as an administrator and manager, because the Chief Justice oversees the entire court system in Alabama. That means managing operations and budgets. And that is exactly what I've been doing in public service for the last couple of decades as a state senator. I was deeply involved in budget processes, and I understand how budgets get passed. I understand how to allocate those funds across the different branches of government. And I understand, and I have the relationships in the legislature to go over and advocate for the court system to make sure that the court system has the resources that that we need to carry out justice. I also have extensive experience in the executive branch, in the governor's office, and in the finance department, where budgets are originally crafted. And then as legal advisor to the governor, I oversaw legal operations at over 100 state agencies in different parts of the state, and making sure that we're fulfilling our duties there. So that management and administrative experience is absolutely crucial for the Chief Justice. That's the experience that I would bring to the table. And while, you know, Sarah Stewart, my opponent, does have some additional experience on the bench as a trial court judge, I don't know that she can speak to the level of administrative management leadership experience that I would bring to the table.
Joined by Brian Taylor, who's running for Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice on the program. Brian, this is from a texter. Please ask your guest if he would have ruled on the bridge in Orange Beach. The Supreme Court on that one, removing a stay by a lower court judge. Can you talk about that? What do you think of that?
I haven't read that case yet, Jeff. I'm familiar with the outcome, but I've not read the case. And so I will have to come back and do that on your show another time. And I don't really know too much about the facts that were argued in the trial court. But I'll say this, that the court, whatever the outcome, from a business perspective, from the perspective of a citizen who's looking for justice in the courts, it's really simple. We ought to apply the law as written. We ought to uphold the rule of law in our decisions and our reliance on precedent. And if the case applies that law in an impartial manner, then it's probably the right answer.
Well, I would say this, I guess more broadly speaking, the idea of sovereign immunity and how it applies to government and in these cases, that a lot of people see government as, you know, the courts is not an accountability mechanism to stop what could be perceived to be an injustice or whatever. And that's really what that was. It wasn't decided based on any merit or any discussion of the facts. It was just like, well, you can't sue the government like the bridge company had here. And that's that when it comes to that, I mean, that seems like it's just pretty much a standard issue to me.
Yeah, you're talking about
sovereign immunity.
The question of sovereign immunity, yeah, in the courts.
And not sure. Really, you know, all these times when you go to court against the state of Alabama, they play that card and case dismissed, right?
Well, there are laws that and precedent that provide limited exceptions to sovereign immunity. And so, again, if the court is applying that standard even-handedly and fairly, then the court is doing the right thing. If the court is ignoring the legal standards and the precedent and the law in order to reach a favored outcome, a judge's, you know, preferred outcome, then that's wrong. And so, you know, again, in this particular case, I just haven't read the court decision and haven't spent time with it to understand what the arguments were, what exceptions might have applied or might have been disregarded. I just don't know.
Fair enough. We won't belabor that any longer. Last question to get you out of here on this. Just tell us how the campaign's going. I mean, we have a field now, like you said, you know who your opponents will be. But I assume you're still making the rounds around the state. This is still kind of just a slow progression, isn't it?
Well, you know, judicial races, as you've said before, Jeff, are a little bit different. People don't really follow those as closely as they follow sort of the top of the ballot races like governor or U.S. senator. And so I think people are starting to pay attention now. Particularly with what's going on in the presidential race, people are more aware of how important the courts are. People have been paying attention to what the U.S. Supreme Court has been doing and sort of redirecting our national jurisprudence back to the basics and the fundamentals of what it means to be a conservative judge. And so, you know, when I go places now and speak, I'm seeing greater interest, a lot of great questions, because people understand how important the Chief Justice position is going to be as we confront a lot of what's going on, not just here in Alabama, but around the country in the coming years. So we'll see. People are getting more and more engaged. The holidays are getting ready to come upon us. But then as soon as the new year hits, I think it's going to be a very hectic 2 months and a very hard-fought race. I intend to hold Sarah Stewart's feet to the fire and make sure she is honest with the voters about her record, and I'm going to be honest with the voters about mine. And I think at the end of the day, the voters are going to see that I'm the only true conservative in this race.
Brian Williams, appreciate your time. Real quick, folks want to find you online, find out more about your candidacy or campaign. How can they do so?
They can go to my website. It's briantaylor.com. That's Brian with a Y, briantaylor.com. My email address is on there. Feel free to email me. Phone numbers on there, and would love to get people engaged. So you can sign up on that website and let us know how to reach you and keep you up to date on the campaign.
All right, thank you very much. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Muddy water, Mississippi, blessed Graceland whispers to me. Carry on, sweet Southern comfort, carry on.
Back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Hit us up there. Let us know what is on your mind. So to come, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. That's in the here in about 45 minutes or so. Let's see what we got here. Ron writes this. Jeff, Hamas does not have an air force. Israel has air superiority over the Gaza Strip. It could make a rubble-strewn wasteland out of the entire Gaza Strip if they so desired. Israel has shown exceptional restraint so far in their response to the October 7th invasion by Hamas. You're right. They could just decimate it. Here's what the people who are kind of saying, hey, you better be careful and handle these people in Gaza like treat them like a belligerent child and not a bloodthirsty terror organization. What if Israel's forced to do that someday? What if Israel's forced to go in and really use its the might of its air force and turn it into, as you say, a rubble-strewn wasteland? Because right now, you need these guys. If this gets out of hand and these guys in Israel have their backs up against the wall, what do you think is going to happen here? And it's World War III. But as far as I can tell, the United States, they think they could just sort of diplomacy their way out of it. They have got to remove Hamas and potentially Hezbollah as a threat to Israel, or this thing escalates. Like, you have to, you can't just appease the threat. You have to eliminate the threat. You can't make them happy, make them quiet down for a few years because they always come back. You have to eliminate this threat. It's as simple as that. I don't think people are really thinking that, though. They're just like, well, we'll just offer them some cash and tell them to go quiet and go, you know. But their motivations are different than anything rational, at least from a Western point of view. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.